Welcome to another webcast. Today with us we have Dan Foreje, that is a SE from Exchange Online. Guys, we have a new Eki page on answers.microsoft.com. Please check it later. I will make the announcements over the chat window. Dan, the stage is yours. Please feel free.
Thank you, Bruno. Today we are going to talk about the availability service. I am going to start presenting my desktop so you can see my slides. So bear with me a few seconds. And I think now we are okay. So when we talk about the availability service today, we are going to talk about what this means, a couple of scenarios, the difference between direct authentication or the old federation authentication that you are used to up to Exchange 2013, the new OAuth protocol that used in 2013 and 2016, and old availability address space which is still used. And before the end, we are going to talk about some troubleshooting tips, or not necessarily tips, but a troubleshooting approach that should be taken when we are thinking about FreeBSD. So, what is cross-organization availability? For those who do not know about it, we are talking about FreeBSD. It's information that you need from a recipient of a meeting regarding the available time when you want to schedule that meeting. If he's busy, if he's free. This information can be retrieved between exchange organizations. The information can be contain only bits of information like if it's free or not, or it can contain more information like the subject and the location of the meeting that it's occupying his time slot. Here you have the permissions that are usually assigned, and those are the two permissions related strictly to availability. And you'll see them in the same name or a different name depending where you check them and where you assign them, if it's Outlook or in the relationship between organizations. It's limited details. That means that you will see only FreeBSD time and the subject and the location, which you can say, okay, it's not limited, but you have more information about the occupied time and the availability only, which means strictly FreeBSD time, meaning it's free or if it's busy. What it's needed to have a cross-organization availability, and when I'm talking about cross-organization availability, I don't care if we are talking about Exchange 2003, 2010, Exchange 2016, or Exchange Online. As long as you have Exchange there, you can use it. And I'm going to be a bit generic on this, so I will not be focused on strictly on Exchange Online or in Exchange on-premise, except the times when I'm going to mention it. So, what we need? We, depending on the Exchange version, you can have one more servers, depending on your coexisting environment, meaning the version of the servers, not the actual number of each instance. And in this table, you can see what it's needed based on the version of Exchange that are in your organization. Of course, there are some limitations based on coexistence requirements, like let's say if you have a 2007 server, the maximum Exchange that you can have in the organization is 2013. If you want to install an Exchange 2016, you'll no longer have 2007. So those are the main requirements. After that, depending on your version of Exchange, you are going to use different methods to request this federation information. The methods are starting with the old one, since the Exchange 2003, publishing the FreeBSD information in public folders databases. Starting with Exchange 2007, we had the availability address space. Exchange 2010 introduced the Federation Trust with the organization relationships, which is also called DAuth, or direct authentication if you want. Since Exchange 2013, we introduced OAuth. We are going to talk about each one of them at their moment. OAuth, by the way, can be used regardless of what other servers you have in the organization. So even if Exchange 2010 or Exchange 2007 does not know about OAuth, they can still use it by proxying that request through the Exchange 2013 server or whatever server it is. And these combinations, you can see them in the table. If you want, for example, in a hybrid environment, when you configure the hybrid, when you run the hybrid configuration wizard, it will configure by default the Federation trust. If you want, you can also configure OAuth at the end of the wizard. But that will work only if you have Exchange 2013 or 16 only in the organization. If you have previous version, that will not show up, but you can also configure it manually. For the Exchange 2013 servers, for example, in a coexisting scenario where you have Exchange 2013 or Exchange 2016, and if you have configured OAuth, the mailboxes that are located on Exchange 2013 or 16 will use OAuth to request the FreeBSD information, but the mailboxes that are located on the Exchange 2010 server will still use Federation. So the servers, by default, the servers on Exchange 2010 will not proxy the request using OAuth. In order to do that, you need to disable the Federation connector, organization relationship. In that scenario, in that case, the Exchange 2010 will use the configured availability address space that it is configured by default by the hybrid wizard, and the request will be proxied through the Exchange 2013. And I'm going to come back about all this stuff during the presentation. So how this works? When both organizations are using Exchange 2010 or from Exchange 2010 to Exchange 2016 or Exchange Online, we don't really care about this, as I said. Basically, you need to configure Federation delegation. You need to set up a Federation trust with the Microsoft Federation Gateway, which is an online service that can be used freely by for this purpose. It's not the same thing like the domain federation. That is for cross-forest permissions, and they are not in the scope of this presentation. They have nothing to do with FreeBSD. So the Federation Trust, it's set up with the Microsoft Federation Gateway. It's a way to authenticate using signed tokens from that third party, say the MFG. Once the Federation Trust is set up in the involved organization, the next thing to do is to create the organization relationships. And those will direct the request to the other organization based on the permissions configured there and towards the endpoint configured in the Federation. Autodiscover needs to work. Autodiscover web service needs to be configured and to work in order to have this, because based on the Autodiscover endpoint, the connection will be done over the Autodiscover. The availability service URL, which is the EWS URL, will be retrieved, and the FreeBSD request will be placed on that EWS endpoint. So if Autodiscover it's not working, you might have a problem. There are ways to overcome it, but you already start to reconfigure the default configuration. So after you set up the trust, if you ensure that auto-discovery it works, you create the organization relationships, and basically you are done. That's enough. FreeBSD should start to work. For FreeBSD using Federation, you don't need to have a directory synchronization set up between the organizations. However, if you have older version of Outlook or if you also implement OAuth, that it will be necessary. And with this, we are going to go to the next scenario when, for example, we will add an Exchange 2007 in the mix. Now, Exchange 2007 has no idea about Federation Trust, organization relationships, and so on. So it will use the availability address space. It is also configured by default, by, as I told you, by the hybrid wizard. It needs to have the target recipient, the one that you request information from, available in the local GAL, like a contact or mail user. And you need to have a working environment using the Federation Trust. Once that it's in place, you create, if it's not already there, the availability address space like you mentioned here, and the FreeBSD request will be placed on the endpoint of the Exchange 2010 or Exchange 2013 server, depending what you have there. You configure the EWS URL for the domain that you request. So in this example, for example, fabricam.com, it's the suffix of the email address of the recipient. And you will use an internal service account for this. And this is it. The request will be proxied through the Exchange 2010 or 2013 server. Now, when I mention about OAuth, if you disable the organization relationship that you're using Federation, you will fall back to the availability address space and proxy the request through the mentioned server in the availability address space configuration. Now, on the organization relationship, and I'm going to prepare connection to Exchange. I'm going to show an Exchange online, Exchange on premise. Let's see one of my tests. Machines. Get organization relationship. Let's see what you have. This is how an organization relationship looks like. I'm going to explain a bit more later, but what I wanted to show you, we have a couple of options here, like FreeBSD access enabled. This will enable FreeBSD access over this relationship. The level of the FreeBSD, which is in this case is limited details. Basically, you'll have the organization relationship will allow FreeBSD time, subject, location, and stuff like this. Those are the permissions that are used using the organization relationship. Basically, here the more restricted one will block the FreeBSD information. So if you have a different permission on your mailbox, you will need to see which one is more restrictive or not. Why I'm telling you this? For example, if on your mailbox you have the permission that it uses, let's say like this, at mailbox folder permission. Okay. Well, I think I mistyped something here. Okay. I'm going to. Okay. So the default permission, which is the default user, which is the user that it's involved when we do such a FreeBSD request using Federation or OAuth or whatever, you need to check the access rights for it. So in this case, the default access rights are availability only, which means the permission of the, on the calendar, it's only for FreeBSD. So even if I configured on the organization relationship limited details, the maximum information that I will get is for FreeBSD time. I am telling you this because when you have, for example, an Exchange 2007 in the organization, Exchange 2007 has no idea about your organization relationship because it doesn't know it, doesn't know Federation. So your front-end server, which is 2010, let's say, will receive the FreeBSD request and it will send it towards the Exchange 2007 using the availability address space. Now, Exchange 2007 will not know the limitation that you have on the organization relationship. So the information that we'll provide will be based on the permission on the calendar. So even, for example, let's say that on your organization relationship you configured to have limited details, availability only, because you don't want to share the location and the subject in the FreeBSD information. If your mailbox is located on the Exchange 2007 server and the default permission for the calendar has limited details, you will provide also the subject of the location because it will not be limited by the organization relationship. I want to mention something else here. So when a request for FreeBSD is done, yes, we have two organization relationship. It's the one from the source organization and it's the one from the target organization. Both of them must have an organization relationship for the other domain. So as I've shown you here, for example, this is an Exchange server that's located on premise and has an organization relationship with an Exchange Online tenant, which has the service domain or the routing domain, if you want, this denfl4.mail.onmicrosoft.com. What this means that all my FreeBSD requests that are made towards cloud will be done using this domain. I will explain a bit more about this few slides later. For this organization relationship will only limit the requests that are made towards my on-premise server. So the FreeBSD access level here with limited details does not apply on my requests towards the other organization. But I will use this organization relationship to match the domain that I'm targeting. I'm going to send the requests towards the AutoDiscover endpoint from here. And from where I'm going to receive the availability service endpoint, I'm going to place the request there. And in the other organization, I will have a similar organization relationship matching my on-premise domain. If this organization relationship it is present there, it will provide me with the information based on those levels here. So the access level being enabled or not, the details level and stuff like this. So basically, the settings that I have in my organization relationship are applied to the request coming from the other organizations. It has a double purpose. Yes, it's used to direct the request to the correct server and to give permission for the request coming from the target server from the other side. We do have another scenario here. It's not longer is no longer encountered too often, but it's still there. So when you have an Exchange 2003 in the mix, well, in that scenario, you'll definitely have the maximum Exchange 2010. And Exchange 2003 is placing the FreeBSD request and is looking for the FreeBSD response in the public folder. basically, what's going to happen? You will have to create, to have an Exchange 2000 server there. You will have to create a public folder database on that Exchange 2010 server, and you need to move the public folder, the FreeBSD folder where that information is exchanged, from the Exchange 2010 on the Exchange 2000, from the Exchange 2003 on the Exchange 2010 server. So when the recipients located, the mailbox is located on the 2003, are checking or placing any FreeBSD requests, they will place them on the public folder, on the FreeBSD public folder on the Exchange 2010 server. What's going to happen when the Exchange 2010 RPC service will see a request placed in that public folder? It will intercept it and send it forward to the other organization using whatever method is configured there, either availability address space or the organization relationship with Federation. There are some steps that need to be done that you have in this slide. I don't want to push too much on this because we will lose a bit too much time. And Exchange 2003 is no longer encountered too often, but it's just for you to know that this is how it's done. Now, what's going to happen if you want to federate, to request, to exchange FreeBSD information between two organizations, let's say two on-premise organizations, and one of them has, it's configured in a hybrid environment, so it also has a cloud exchange online. Basically, the hybrid environment is going to use a shared domain, a shared address space, meaning that domain will be present both in cloud and in on-premise. And that organization will have the auto-discover pointing only to the on-premise server. So in a hybrid environment, when you have mailboxes in both sides, your auto-discover should always point to on-premise. Now, this provides a problem, gives us a problem. Why? Because a FreeBSD request will not be proxied, or not necessarily the FreeBSD request, but the authentication that is done using Federation or everything else, it will not be proxied from one organization to the other. So you need to authenticate to the correct organization, and if the mailbox is not present there, the request, it will fail. It will not be sent where, for example, the mailbox was moved, like Exchange Online. So basically, you will have to create relationships between all the organizations, and your premise organization, that it's not in hybrid, will configure the Federation and the organization relationship based on the information returned from the Federation information towards the on-premise server. So everything will be fine as long as the mailbox is located on-premise. But if the mailbox was migrated to Exchange Online, that FreeBSD request will fail. Now, the only way to overcome this, or necessary, not necessarily overcome, let's say a sort of workaround that maybe or not be feasible, is to create a second organization relationship on the standalone organization, on the on-premise organization, with a second domain that it's configured as an alias in the cloud. In the Exchange Online. Usually you use the on Microsoft.com domain or mail.onmicrosoft.com domain. And you need to enter manually the address of the recipient under the form of your alias at domain.mail.onmicrosoft.com, and in that way the request will go towards the Exchange Online organization and not towards the on-premise one. The other way around will work, because in Exchange Online you will have an organization relationship with your on-premise exchange, which will go okay. That will not be a problem. However, the problem is that the users will have to either type the usual target recipient like username at domain.com for the on-premise ones, or username at domain.mail.microsoft.com for the cloud ones. This can be solved by creating some sort of contacts, or I don't know, everybody can think on the method that is best fitted for his infrastructure. Now, if there are most of the mailboxes are already migrated in cloud, or the mailboxes are currently being migrated to Exchange Online, you can change the auto discover endpoint in the organization relationship to point manually to point it towards Exchange Online, and this way you will place your requests directly towards Exchange Online. So everything will be fine, no modification in the target email address, all the users will feel the same way, but in that case you will no longer be able to request FreeBSD information from the mailboxes that are still located on-premise. Now, about OAuth. What is this OAuth? It's an open standard that it's used for authorization, it's used to it's better than the Federation one. It's used by a lot of third parties to interconnect and to authenticate from different service providers to one another, to authenticate between them and stuff like this. You are already familiar with the methods, probably, when you have sites where you need to authenticate with the Hotmail or with the Gmail or the Facebook account without creating a new account. Those are based on OAuth. It's working also with an authorization server that is located in Azure, in the Office 365 environment, at least in Microsoft environment. FreeBSD works with OAuth. You have, for example, you have other services in Exchange Online that also benefit by OAuth. It's used in the 21 VIANET tenants, which are in China. They will require at minimum Exchange 2013 Service Pack 1. And it's configured automatically since CU5 if you don't have other legacy Exchange server on-premise. If you have, you can configure it manually. It's not a very difficult operation. You just need to follow guide and be careful on what you type. OAuth redirection does not work with OAuth, but it will work because you still have the federation that is still configured there, and it uses the information from the organization relationship. As mentioned, the wizard will configure both inter-organization connectors that are used for OAuth and organization relationship that are used with federation. Now, one of the, let's say, downsides, if you want, in using OAuth is that you will no longer have so granular control over what information you pass. You will base your availability information on the permission on the actual accounts, which it might be better because it creates less confusion. But the main thing is you either enable OAuth and be benefit of all that comes with it, or you disable it and you don't use OAuth. You use Federation or DAuth with what you are used to in controlling in the organization relationship configuration. Availability address space, it's not configured by anybody right now, but why not? You are free to use it if you want. You can configure it between Exchange on-premise and Exchange Online. you will usually find it configured when there are Lotus environments which want to share FreeBSD information, and they usually use the Delco Existence Manager. In that scenario, Delco Existence Manager is using availability address space to exchange FreeBSD information between Exchange and the on-premise environment. So it's it can be used, it just need to be manually configured, and you have the articles to do it. Well, when you have a mixed environment, it's recommended to have all your updates installed on the servers. There are a lot of changes that are done in Exchange Online, for example, that if you don't have your servers updated, might fail. And it will also generate issues in troubleshooting because you'll not know if the failure is caused by an update that was not installed, or if installing an update that will fix a specific thing will also solve, which might not be directly related to, it might not be a fix for FreeBSD, for example, but that fix that it's in the service pack or in the cumulative update might solve a problem that causes your FreeBSD information to fail. This is why it's important to have the updates there. Now, a very important thing is that the mailbox servers will place the request and authentication request and towards the either MFG or the authentication server in Azure to authenticate, to verify the certificates, to verify CRLs and stuff like this. So the Exchange servers should have internet access, at least on HTTPS, so on 443 protocol, in order to be able to access all those resources. Not only the EWS or AutoDiscover endpoints, there are also other endpoints that are used in this process. Using proxy. Well, it's a problem here because it depends on your proxy. If that proxy interferes with the HTTPS communication, that could be a problem. So if you have issues or when you end the proxy, basically it will cause problems when you request FreeBSD from on-premise. So the mailbox is located on-premise and request information from a cloud mailbox. Most of the time, the proxy is then where the will misbehave. So if you have a way to disable the proxy to see if it works, that would be one of the first things to test. Now, what about the authenticated proxy? Those are again not recommended because if you will ask for authentication when you try to connect to the proxy to access the internet, the server will not be able to enter any username and password. So create some whitelists or to bypass proxy for your Exchange servers. Now, one of the important things regarding FreeBSD, the order of checks when you request some FreeBSD information. Let's say that I am an Exchange Online mailbox, which of course knows Exchange Online, knowing to work with OAuth, with DAuth, and availability address space. And I'm trying to request the FreeBSD information from an on-premise mailbox. The first thing that you or the server will look for is to see if the recipient that I'm requesting it's located locally, meaning a local mailbox on the Exchange Online server, or a local mailbox in the organization. Keep in mind that even if you have a hybrid environment, you are talking about two organizations, the on-premise one and the cloud one. So when you request the FreeBSD information, the first thing to look is to see if you have a local mailbox. If you have it, nothing will be used. We will carry the information from there and display it. Now, if the mailbox is not local, the first thing that you will check is to see if you have an intra-organization connector matching the domain of the recipient that you placed in the scheduling system. If you find an intra-organization connector and it's enabled, like you see it in the screenshot there, it will use OAuth, regardless if the configuration is completed or not. So if the OAuth configuration is not working properly, the FreeBSD request will not fall back to Federation, for example. It will stop there, it will throw you an error, and that's it. If you don't have an intra-organization connector matching the target domain, it will look for an organization relationship. And if you, it will check to see if there you have an organization relationship matching the domain that you are interested in, if it will find it to use federation. If not, it will check for availability address space, and in the end it will fail. So no fallback if one of them fails. And considering this, well, this is, let's say, more or less the same thing that I already said. If you have multiple Exchange servers on-premise, users that are located on Exchange 2013-2016 will use intra-organization connectors with OAuth if it's configured. If not, they will use whatever is configured from in the order mentioned. Users on Exchange 2010 will only use organization relationship because they don't know about intra-organization connectors. If an organization relationship is not present or it's disabled, they will fall back to availability address space. And the last one is Exchange 2007, which only knows about availability address space, which is not configured by default in a hybrid, so it will be proxied in a hybrid, meaning between on-premise and cloud. So it will be proxied to the CAS server that you have it in your on-premise organization, either 2010, 2013, or 16, 2010 or 2013. If you have 2016, you cannot have the Exchange 2007. I wanted to talk a bit about how you configure federation, and I'm going to talk about it in when we are talking about troubleshooting. So, what means that you configure that federation trust? Basically, you will let's say here, and I think I have here in your organization in sharing. After you run a hybrid wizard, this federation trust will already be configured by the wizard. If you don't have a hybrid or you don't have a hybrid environment already configured, here it will be empty and you'll be able to create a new federation trust. When you create a new federation trust, you'll be asked for your domain, and you'll be asked to enter domain proof, a string of characters that you will have to enter in your DNS. And without that information, after that string, that text record will be populated to the public DNS in order to validate that you are the owner of the domain. You will configure an entry in the Microsoft Federation Gateway. You'll exchange some certificates, so you know about the Federation Gateway, and the Federation Gateway will know about you, and you'll be able to communicate and validate certificates. How this works, basically, when you try to access a site in another organization based on organization relationship, you will reach that organization, you will not be able to authenticate, you will go to the third party, like the third party authentication server, which in this case is the MFG. You will the MFG will recognize you. It will recognize that you requested a token to authenticate it to the other organization. It will sign that token, and then you will go to your target environment with the token signed by MFG, and the other organization will recognize it, will see that, okay, I'm trusting it because it's signed by the Microsoft Federation Gateway, and it will allow you to access the resources. This is the principle in this kind of federation trust authentication. Oath, it's more or less in the same way. You will exchange a bit more than just what I mentioned here. But basically, you will have an authentication token that is signed by the authentication server, which you will use to access the resources in the other side. When you create the federation trust, and I think I have this information here, yes. From, for example, for the other organization, once you have a domain, and doesn't matter, an exchange server, doesn't matter what version, exchange 2010 or exchange 2013, you can carry the federation information from the other organization, running the command that you see here. When you run get federation information for the other domain, you will retrieve the auto discover endpoint that needs to be used to place those requests. Who is the token issuer? In this case, it's for Federation is Microsoft Online, which is the represents the MFG, and the target application URI. Well, that's the identifier in the MFG for the domains that you are federated. You have federated there. This information is retrieved using anonymous authentication from the autodiscover endpoint of the other domain. So when you run this, you will look for, like Outlook does, looking for the autodiscover endpoints for the respective domain. In the moment, you'll find the correct one, like, I don't know, let's say autodiscover.onmicrosoft.com, autodiscover.contoso.microsoft.com, or contoso.onmicrosoft.com/autodiscover, and so on. So all those three or four possible autodiscover URLs. Once you find the correct one, which you can authenticate using anonymous, and you will be able to retrieve this information if everything is right there. Based on the information from here, you have the organization relationship configured. So if you take a look, for example, in this, well, it's quite difficult, but let's try to. No, it doesn't work like this. So the target application URI, for example, those domains are configured in Exchange Online. Yes. So this is why you will see it on with this application URI, with this identified outlook.com. So once you add a domain in Exchange Online as an accepted domain, that domain will be automatically added to the Federation information from Exchange Online, so you can you don't need to create a federation trust or anything else for that. If the domain is already present in on-premise, in the moment you request the information, you get a different application URI, which will belong to your on-premise infrastructure. It's the one with, and I'm going to show you, the Exchange, I don't know, 14 rocks transmitted with one letter, FY, stuff like this. Now, this information is used to create the organization relationship. The target application URI that you retrieve from the federation information is the same with the target application URI in the organization relationship. The domain names here are the domain names that are usually in here. Autodiscovery PR is the one that you find it in the organization relationship. So this is how the organization relationship is created, based on the information retrieved from the federation, get federation information. If anything from there it was changed, you should update the organization relationship. Now, there is one thing that I want to mention here, and pretty sure that it's also in the slides forward, but this is the correct time. What's happening if, for example, you want to actually place the request to a different URI, or your autodiscover is failing? Yes, because your autodiscover EPR that is configured in the organization relationship has something wrong there. It's not working okay, or I don't know, you have an issue with it. You can configure the target sharing EPR in the organization relationship, which is the availability service URL from the target organization, meaning the EWS URL. So you can actually type here the HTTPS, I don't know, / mail.domain.com/EWS / exchange.asmx, and you will bypass auto-discover. This is not a workaround. This is not something that, okay, what's going to happen with my auto-discover? Nothing. The only service that it's using Federation in exchange is availability. So if you don't process auto-discover, you will go directly to the EWS endpoint and access the information directly from there, considering that the EWS is working fine. So that's something else. The only thing that might affect you is if you change the actual URL from where the URL points to. In that case, yes, the auto-discover will not give you the new URL. You will keep trying to connect to the one manually configured. So the first thing that you usually need to check is the behavior is the same regardless the client you use, if it's Outlook or OAuth, because it might be depending on the client. If in one of them works, that means that you have another problem is not related to Federation. Check and see if auto-discover are present and accessible. If you see there is an issue with the auto-discover, try configuring the target sharing EPR that I just mentioned. One of the things that might usually be different is a difference between the auto-discovery PR mentioned in the Federation information and the one from the organization relationship. I don't know, maybe it was changed in the meantime, so the one in the organization relationship was changed. You run Get Federation information, see if the information from there matches the one in the organization relationship, and update the organization relationship. The tests that you usually do in any FreeBSD information are the test organization relationship. Those will actually test the if the organization relationship is properly configured and it works okay. It uses an identity from the local environment and try to access the other organization and retrieve the organization relationship information and compare them to see if all it's okay. If you use OAuth, it's test to OAuth connectivity, specifying the EWS endpoint, a local mailbox that you use to retrieve that token, and use verbose and pipefl to get the information that you want, because it will tell you the entire process of the retrieving, creating the token, accessing the URL, and if everything is fine, give you a success. If not, well, you need to see what error you have there and act on it. Test Federation Trust, it will actually trust to see if the Federation is configured okay. If you have issues with the proxy, this might give you information about that. You can run the command only on premises. Test Federation Trust Certificate will check to see if the Federation, the certificate used for Federation, it's present on all the servers and it's valid. The certificate must be present on all the servers. And by the way, the Microsoft Remote Connectivity Analyzer, the test for FreeBSD, it's a very good test, but that will test the endpoints. If you remember, when you run it, it will ask you for a username and password that you use to access the mailbox. And it will use that username and password to access the information for the target mailbox. So if that works, that yes, it means that the auto-discover, EWS, the FreeBSD information is retrievable. You have an endpoint active for AWS security that is used by Federation. And that's it. That can be green, but your FreeBSD might fail because the FreeBSD information retrieved between organization can be it's authenticated using Federation, using OAuth or whatever availability address space, but let's skip that. So those tests will not be done by remote connectivity analyzer. So if this works and your FreeBSD fails, it usually points that so you have something wrong with the Federation or OAuth configuration. What usually you usually check the first thing that you check on OAuth, you check to see if GetIT organization connector in both premises shows the correct target address domains and the discovery endpoint. Discovery endpoint meaning the endpoint for auto discover, and you make sure the domains are present. Usually the inter organization connector from on premise will point you to the service domain, and the inter organization connector from the cloud will point you to your actual domain, like I don't know, contoso.com for example. Why this? I don't know if I mentioned it. So basically in a hybrid environment, when you move the mailbox from on-premise to cloud, the on-premise recipient will have an external email address configured with the routing domain, like user at domain.mail.microsoft.com. When you request FreeBSD, you will find that recipient, and you will find that the recipient has an external email address. You will look on the domain on that external email address and start doing what I said. See if you have an intra-organization connector for that domain. If not, go to federal organization relationship, and so on. Now, when you do OAuth, the test for OAuth, what you need to make sure, those you can find if you forgot them in the TechNet article explaining how to configure OAuth. But basically, the service principal name that the SPN that it's configured in Azure for your authentication server must contain your domain. If that domain is not present there, you will usually get an 401. It's in the response for the OAuth. And you compare it with the domain that it's in your intra-organization configuration located on-premise. Another situation when you have 401s if the user is not synchronized. So if you are trying to do a test of connectivity for a user that it's not synchronized, you'll also get an error. This is like when you use, for example, the administrator account. If you use that administrator account, you will get the 401 unauthorized. So the users must be synchronized when you use OAuth. About the OAuth, one of the first things that are done when it's configured is to export the OAuth, the authentication certificate, the Exchange Server OAuth certificate that is present on the local Exchange Server, and then import it in Azure. If the certificate was changed or something happened, you need to recreate it, stuff like this. You need to compare it to make sure the OAuth config certificate thumbprint is the same like the with the certificate that it's installed in Exchange, and you also need to make sure that that certificate was uploaded and it's present in Exchange Online. At the end of the slides, there are a lot of I've put most of the PowerShell commands used to check all those things, so you can have them from there. Now, the GetAuth hash server, it's the information that you have on premise about the authentication server in Azure, about the OAuth server. The certificate that it's in Azure, that's on the authentication server, can also expire. So from time to time, if you have an issue, you might need to check to see if by any chance the certificate has expired or not. Refreshing the certificate is done in a similar way like you do it with the federation with get auth hash server set auth hash server dash refresh auth hash certificate, and the certificates will be refreshed. I think I have something about that in this presentation. The partner application that is also in on-premise environment needs to be enabled, and it should list, should show the partnership with that Spring. The test that I mentioned about test to auth connectivity that you are doing from both directions, and by the way, you can have, for example, OAuth connector configured in one side and to use OAuth from on-premise to cloud, and the connector in the other side to be disabled. In the other side, you just use federation, but well, it's not recommended, but you can reach in a scenario like this, and it's working. This does not work for federation, so if one of the organization relationship is disabled, FreeBSD will not work in both sides, because they will not, in one side they will not match the, they will not know the endpoint, and from the other side they will not have the permissions there. And the commands that I mentioned, to refresh the certificate for the Federation Trust, you use the Set Federation Trust Refresh Metadata. For OAuth, you can use the Set Auth Hash Server Refresh Auth Hash Metadata. For now, this might not happen because the certificate, I don't think that it expired that until now once. Well, you, it, OAuth, it's only present recently, so probably this will start happening from the next year. now, how do you know the error? When you run, when you have a FreeBSD error, you usually have, you only have information not available. You have the different tools. The easiest and the fastest way, if you are using, if the requesting mailbox is located in Exchange Online or on an Exchange 2013-16 server, you can use developer tools in the browser with, and look for the get user availability internal request. That will show you the exact error and can point you to the right, to where the issue lies. Either it's auto-discover and you can try to put a target sharing EPR and see if bypassing the auto-discover works, or it can be something else. It's the first thing that you want to know, what's your error, where the issue is located. In Outlook, you can enable troubleshooting logging. In Outlook 2010, you have an availability service log. In Outlook 2013, you need to collect the logs while you reproduce the error and well, be assisted by an Exchange support engineer, because the log can only be decrypted internally by support engineers. When you want to see the corresponding error in the other side, when the error is on the request placed in cloud towards on-premise mailboxes, the next the place you first look are the IIS logs. You look on the front-end server, you look in the INET pub logs, log files in the front-end service directory, and you are looking for logs containing AS auto discover slash cross forest. Those are the requests that are created using cross forest federation, if you want. And the request ending with WS security or placed on the endpoints with WS security are requests created using federation, with using direct authentication. You need to follow the IIS logs from the you need to follow the logs from the IIS log directory to the Exchange log directory. In the Exchange log directory, you have more information about where the request was proxied, if it was proxied to a different server, and so on. The purpose is to actually find the server where the error originated, because it's not necessary that the front-end server has the issue. The issue can come from one of the servers in the back where the mailbox is located. So you need to follow the logs until you find the server that caused it. For OAuth, you'll find you'll see the request containing the same pattern with AutoDiscover or ASProxy Cross Forest, those that are marked by me here, and you will not see the AutoDiscover slash WA security at the end of the line. This is how you can identify if the request was received on premise using OAuth or using Federation. And of course, the request will come to the CAS server. It will be sent in the end to the last place will be the mailbox server where the mailbox is located. And it will pass first to, by requesting the autodiscover. The autodiscover will go to the request for autodiscover will process to the CAS server belonging in the same location with the mailbox server. It will retrieve the information to connect to the mailbox. Retrieve the availability service URL, and then a new request will be created on the AWS endpoint following the same path. Basically, it comes on the AWS on the front end and proxied up to the mailbox server where the mailbox is located. When you have errors like, I don't know, 4 or something, or 500, or 503, or the 5 series are the most troublesome, because usually are generic errors that contain everything that is not detailed in the 4 series. You can use the fail request tracing logs, or FREB. You enable them on the IIS server, and I'm going to show it here, yes? So you enable it on the IIS server, like, let's see if we found one. This is an Exchange 2013 server. We have the default website, which is the front end, and where you first start, let's say on the auto-discover. The fail request tracing rules here will create a rule for the error code that you are interested in. You click on add, and the rule will look like this. Yes. So in this scenario, I'm going to look for all, let's see, because it's easier. Yes. So I'm going to create a new rule for all content. I'm interested in the error code that it's I found in the log, let's say 500. I'm going to leave everything here set up, and this is the rule that I'll capture on the autodiscover folder. If the error comes from AWS, I need to do some to do the same thing in the AWS. After I set up the rule, I'm going on the default, on the root site, on the default site, and go in the fail request tracing, configure fail request tracing here. And I need to enable it. Once enabled, it will write, for each 500 event, it will write a file in that location. The location, I think I have it here. Yes, will look like this, and the error will also look like the one you see here. You need to have both those files, the XML and XLS, it's the CSS formatting, in order to be able to read this normally, because otherwise it's a pain. It might point you in this, for example, is for a 401 error, and it might point you to where the issue can originate. In this scenario, for example, it's a file authorization issue, meaning that somewhere under this service, the file there might have an access denied, or the permissions maybe are set wrong. Sometimes the error is not very clear and can be problematic, but it's another place to look for. And as I mentioned, after you look in the IIS log, the next place to look for it's the, even if the request is, so if you, usually if you have a 404, for example, that means that, okay, the page is missing. Maybe URL that it's typed there is wrong. But if the request is not a 404, the request will usually go to the Exchange server. So if the request passed the IIS, so the error was not directly in the IIS, and it's coming from somewhere in Exchange, you will definitely see an entry in the Exchange server logs, which will either give you some information that you use, or it will tell you that the response was received from a different server where that request was proxied. Yes, by the case. And if you find that, you need to go to the server mentioned there and look for the and start over. Look in the IIS and see what you have there, or look in the Exchange logs and see what generated that. You look for CrossForest WS Security OAuth, and those are the entries that you use to search for the requests. There is another tool, and this is already it was used in Exchange 2010 more often, but Exchange 2013 does not have it. It can be used if you want to reproduce it, if it's something that is reproduced more hard. You need, it's called a, this will do the Exchange trace. The problem with this tool is that the results cannot be interpreted. It can only be interpreted inside by the Microsoft engineers. So the decryption tools are not available and are not public. And in this tool, you need to configure several tags. Those are usually the components and the tags that should be enabled when you troubleshoot, when you have FreeBSD issues that you want to trace using the Exchange Tracer. And those are the, if the engineer that assisting you is using this, those are the usually the tags that are usually mentioned there. Some of them might be present, or some of them might not be present, depending on the Exchange version, if it's Exchange 2010 or if it's Exchange 2013. The tool is available in Exchange 2010, but in if you need to run something like this in Exchange 2013, the tool must be provided by the Exchange engineer. And I'm going to leave this a bit to see what can be collected from an on-premise Exchange server and the information that it's used when troubleshooting FreeBSD. Those are it's a book of commands for both OAuth and Free Federation. So having all this information, you will have everything that it's needed to start comparing and checking if the configurations are okay. You verify the accepted domains, check the Outlook anywhere that it's used when you perform the auto-discover. You check the client access server to see what roles are there, the roles of the servers. You WinHttp show proxy will show if there is any proxy configured on the WinHttp layer. You check the thumbprint from the issuing certificate. You convert it to 64-bit to be able to compare it with the one that was uploaded in Azure, and so on. Do perform the tests, get the organization relationship. And by the way, here there is the sharing policy, but by the sharing policy, it's used for sharing, calendar sharing, which has nothing to do with FreeBSD. So that it's only used when you go in the calendar and send an invite that you open in the other side. It does not have any impact in FreeBSD, but it can be useful if you see more FreeBSD that you would, more information in the FreeBSD than you would expect. It might have something to do with some invites sent there that you are not aware of. The same commands that you should collect from Exchange Online. There are fewer commands because some of the information cannot be changed. It's configured by default, and you don't have any problem, any setting, any. You cannot do anything with it. One thing that you should be interested in is this Get Federated Organization Identifier. I mentioned something at some point about. In the organization relationship about the domain from where the request comes. And I say usually the requests from coming from Exchange Online are coming from this routing domain. This can not necessarily be always true. See, to connect to Exchange Online and show what I'm talking about. The information present in the organization identifier will show you the default domain that it's used to request this information, which by default it's the routing domain, the mail.onmicrosoft.com, but can change. And in that scenario, if your on-premise organization relationship does not contain that domain, FreeBSD request will fail when using Federation. So I'm talking about this. For example, in this scenario, the default domain is this one, but I can change it. I can put the default domain, I don't know, on something like this. Set Federated Organization Identifier default domain. I'm going to change this, and in that moment the request, the FreeBSD request will come from that domain. What's going to happen, because my on-premise organization does not have that domain in the organization relationship, it will deny access and it will cause FreeBSD to fail. The last thing that needs to be collected is from Azure. Basically are the configurations for the authentication server, the SPNs, and uploaded certificate from on-premise that you need to compare with the one from on-premise. Well, here are some articles that you can use to get some more information that was here and to have some more explanations. And, well, I think that's about it. Liz, if you have any questions.
Yes, if anyone have a question, you can unmute yourself and make it, or type it on the chat window. Dan, by the way, very good presentation. I really like it.
Thank you. Hope that everybody, it was clear for everybody.
Yeah. Well, Dan, thank you again for your presence over here and for everyone that had been present here as well. This content will be available, as always, on blogtechnet.microsoft.com/O365support and the newest web page that is the IKI web page from Answers that we can access by the link that is on the chat window. Thank you very much for the time over here, and then I hope to see you soon in another webcast.
Well, thank you very much, and well, I hope so.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye.